Hello, my name is Melissa Logson, and I serve as Associate Pastor for New Covenant Fellowship, bringing you today's Palm Sunday teaching, Ascend to Love. I invite you to look at Jesus' triumphal entry that we celebrate today, Palm Sunday, and the upcoming Passion Week narrative through the lens of Jesus looking forward to his ascension. Have you ever gotten so caught up in a TV show only to find yourself on a cliffhanger? You know, that feeling when the "to be continued" pops up on the screen and the reality hits you that you'll need to wait a whole week or longer for the next episode to come out? And it's even longer wait when it's a book series that leaves us waiting to find out what happens next. What do we do in the waiting? How do we feel? If we're really caught up in the story, do we find ourselves talking about it? Hypothesizing what will happen next? Maybe even a bit anxious to find out how the main character will fare. I know I've gotten so caught up in a story that I've rushed to get the next book in the series as soon as it comes out. I've spent countless nights staying up way too late, reading the book, listening to the audiobook, binge-watching a series, or watching the next movie in a TV franchise. All to find out what will happen to the hero of the story. Will she be okay? Will he overcome? Will they get their triumph and have their victory, their happily ever after? This week in the church calendar can have a similar feel. We're at the beginning of the Passion Week, starting today, Palm Sunday, journeying with Jesus into Jerusalem, the crowds adoringly worshiping Jesus as the Messiah, the King, then the run-ins Jesus has with the ruling religious leaders, and through the Passover meal Jesus shares with the disciples, the passionate prayers Jesus prays at the Mount of Olives, the betrayal of one from Jesus' inner circle, the mockery trial Jesus faces before the government leaders, and the story continuing to unfold as Jesus hangs on a cross and then dies. So much is packed into this Passion Week. It's almost too much to take in all at once. I'm sure the disciples' heads were spinning. After all, before this week, they were following Jesus and enjoying hearing Jesus say how he had come to declare God's kingdom justice for all. Jesus was healing people and speaking out against corruption and calling people to right living, to a way of interacting with each other and living aligned with God's kingdom. Jesus was bringing hope and freedom, salvation to the people, similar to us getting swept up in a moving story. Those listening in agreement to Jesus' words were caught up in the trajectory of what he was saying and doing, many hoping for him to overthrow the oppressive rule and take over as king. And then this Passion Week ends with a cliffhanger moment on Friday. Jesus dying before all that Jesus had declared coming to fruition. Seemingly, the hero of the story is defeated. The people left wondering how things will work out now. Even though Jesus had tried to prepare his disciples for this, as he repeatedly predicted what would happen and declared by faith that God would raise him back to life, they couldn't grasp the victory in the works. All they knew is that it looked like defeat. Jesus' contemporaries were watching the story unfold in real time, similar to that feeling we have when caught up in the middle of a good story, wondering if the main character will somehow, no matter how seemingly impossible, overcome the impossible odds before them. For us now, we have the benefit of knowing that Jesus is going to be raised from the dead. We will celebrate next Sunday on Easter. We know now all that Jesus' resurrection means and brings. But if we suspend what we already know and take time to enter into the Passion story this week, to walk with the narrative as it unfolds, I think it has the potential to be a powerful spiritual experience. In fact, I invite you to do that this week. It's such an expansive narrative that in no way am I able to begin to do it justice in one teaching. Last year, when I taught on Palm Sunday, I invited us to identify with the crowds in this narrative. The worshiping crowds on Palm Sunday and the jeering crowds leading up to Jesus' crucifixion. Today, I invite us to look at this story from Jesus' perspective of his coming ascension. As I was reading through Luke, this verse caught my attention and prompted me to look at this week through this lens. In Luke 9:51, we read, "As the time drew near for him, Jesus, to ascend to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. Jesus had his coming ascension in mind. Even though Jesus talked openly with his disciples about his death and resurrection, it was difficult for them to fathom. Not only could they not come to terms with the idea of Jesus dying, as we too may be able to relate to whenever we think of a close loved one's dying, but also when Jesus does die, they can't fathom the second part of Jesus' prediction of his coming resurrection and ascension. And because they didn't have that hope in that moment, it can be easy to look at the betrayal, accusations, torture, and ultimate death of Jesus through that hopeless lens. And I've at times mistakenly focused on the disciples' feelings of defeat and thought that Jesus might have felt that way. So even on a day of rejoicing, as the crowds wave their palm branches declaring Jesus their king, deep down I wondered if it was like a wet blanket thrown on the celebration. Jesus was, after all, fully human and very much not wanting to be killed, even pleading with God to be spared somehow. It's easy to see this week's events through the disciples' perspective and miss seeing how Jesus, knowing of his coming ascension, would change his mindset as he went into Jerusalem, how Jesus' trust in God could be his focus in it all. This perspective changes everything for me, bringing a new layer of hope to the unfolding story of the Passion Week. Seeing through this lens of the hope Jesus had as he walked towards the pleasant and painful moments of this week. Have you ever wondered at the timing of Jesus' decision to go to Jerusalem? Did Jesus really have to go to Jerusalem right then? Could he have continued to stay out in the smaller villages, continue to preach and heal, avoided what he knew awaited him? He could have maybe had a few more years with his disciples. As we know, they for sure weren't ready for Jesus to leave them. But would they have really ever been ready? Of course, given the religious and political climate, I don't think that things were going to calm down anytime soon or get better. The level of unrest, the level of oppression, both from religious leaders and the Roman Empire, were not going away. Jesus starts the journey resolutely when he knows his time of ascension was at hand. Why? What does seem to impact the timing of Jesus' resolute entrance to Jerusalem is a significant moment he had in prayer. This moment is recorded in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. We call it Jesus' transfiguration. In Luke 9, 29 through 31, we read, "As Jesus was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes flashed white like lightning. Two men, Moses and Elijah, were talking with him. They were clothed with heavenly splendor and spoke about Jesus' departure, which he would achieve in Jerusalem." Luke records the nature of what Moses and Elijah were talking to Jesus about, his upcoming ascension in Jerusalem. And Matthew and Mark record a voice saying that Jesus is the much-loved Son of God. In Matthew 17:5, we read, "While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, 'This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him.'" There is so much meaning wrapped up in Jesus' transfiguration as a proof point of Jesus' legitimacy as the Messiah and a glimpse into his coming glory as ascended and reigning King. What I want us to see and hear in that moment of prayer is how Jesus received the guidance, affirmation, empowerment, and encouragement to obediently continue into Jerusalem, bringing the good news of God's kingdom with the assurance that God loves Jesus. Before and after this moment, the Gospels record Jesus predicting his death. Being fully human, I wonder how Jesus didn't turn back around, didn't give up hope. I wonder how Jesus kept his focus through the trials and sufferings, through the cross. So I find this moment, experience as Jesus prayed, to be a beautiful gift to bolster Jesus as he went forward. knowing the whole time he was loved by God, being affirmed by God for loving God with his obedience, and being reminded of his identity as Messiah and King, giving Jesus the ability to continue to show love to all peoples. In John 13:1, we read, "Before the festival of Passover, Jesus knew that his time had come to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them fully." And so, knowing the time drew near for him to ascend to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. Picture being there with Jesus as he journeys from the Mount of Olives, on a donkey, in his triumphant procession. The crowds recite Psalm 118, a common psalm to quote on their way to Jerusalem to celebrate Passover. Jesus is being hailed Messiah and King, the gate to God. There is so much historical and prophetic significance in this place, the Mount of Olives, and in the act of Jesus riding a donkey for his processional declaration as king. Although the disciples missed the significance of many events at the time, Jesus was fully aware of the significance and was intentionally declaring his ascension as the king and will take his place on a heavenly throne. This moment is predicted in prophetic verses like this one in Zechariah, which is put to music in a song in our worship set today. Zechariah 9:9. "Rejoice greatly, O daughter Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you. Triumphant and victorious is he, humble and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." Later in Zechariah 14:3 through 4, we read this verse of the Lord being the defense for Israel standing on the Mount of Olives. "Then the Lord will go straight and fight against those nations as when he fights on a day of battle. On that day, his feet shall stand on the Mount of Olives, which lies before Jerusalem on the east." And so in Luke 19, we read, "When Jesus had come near Bethphage and Bethany at the place called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of the disciples, saying, 'Go into the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find tied there a colt that has never been ridden. Untie it and bring it here.' As he was approaching the path down from the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of the disciples began to praise God joyfully, with a loud voice, for all the deeds of power that they had seen, saying, 'Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest heaven.'" This mount held such significance in Jesus' life. It was a place Jesus often went to in prayer. In Luke 22:39, we read, "He came out and went, as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives, and the disciples followed him." I wonder, of all the places, why Jesus would regularly go to prayer at the Mount of Olives, and if it was because of the historical and prophetic significance of this place. If perhaps it helped Jesus keep before him all the prophecies, and if that helped shape his prayers and helped Jesus to continue forward in obedience and trust in God. If so, I'm guessing it was especially strengthening to Jesus on the night he ends up being betrayed. Perhaps it helped him to remember his identity as king, being loved by God, his upcoming ascension to that love, and to the heavenly throne as the king, to reign over all, God's kingdom displayed in love. On the journey, Jesus continues to predict his death, resurrection, and ascension. He encourages his disciples with hope and direction. As he intended to encourage the disciples, I'm sure his own words of faith were an encouragement to himself as well, for all that he was going to have to go through. Luke 18:31 through 34. "Taking the 12 disciples aside, Jesus said, 'Listen, we're going up to Jerusalem, where all the predictions of the prophets concerning the Son of Man will come true. He will be handed over to the Romans, and he will be mocked, treated shamefully, and spit upon. They will flog him with a whip and kill him, but on the third day he will rise again. But they didn't understand any of this. The significance of his words was hidden from them, and they failed to grasp what he was talking about. In Luke 12:4-7, Jesus says, "I tell you, my friends, don't be terrified by those who can kill the body, but after that can do nothing more. Even the hairs on your head are all counted. Don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows." In John 14:27-31, we hear these words. Jesus says, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. I give to you not as the world gives. Don't be troubled or afraid. You have heard me tell you, I'm going away and returning to you. If you love me, you'd be happy that I'm going to the Father, because the Father is greater than me. I have told you before it happens, so that when it happens, you will believe. I won't say much more to you, because this world's ruler is coming. He has nothing on me. Rather, he comes so that the world will know that I love the Father and do just as the Father has commanded me." In Luke 12:32, Jesus says, "Don't be afraid, little flock, because your Father delights in giving you the kingdom." And in Luke 17:33, "Whoever tries to preserve their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life will preserve it." Jesus showed the way of total faithfulness to God, even if it meant death. Jesus kept telling about God's kingdom and showing them what God's kingdom is like, one of freedom, showing them another way of living in relationship to God and each other, one full of love. As the time approaches for Jesus' ascension, he knows his earthly ministry is coming to an end. But Jesus also knows that his heavenly ministry will then begin, and how much more beneficial that will be to his disciples. In John 14:16-21, Jesus says, "I will ask the Father, and he will send another companion, who will be with you forever. This companion is the Spirit of truth, whom the world can't receive because it neither sees him nor recognizes him. You know him because he lives with you and will be with you. I won't leave you as orphans. I will come to you. Soon the world will no longer see me, but you will see me. Because I live, you will live too. On that day, you will know that I am in my Father, you are in me, and I am in you. Whoever has my commandments and keeps them loves me. Whoever loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love them and reveal myself to them." As we conclude, I want us to look at Jesus' last words, recorded in Luke 23:46. "Then Jesus, crying out with a loud voice, said, 'Father, into your hands I commend my spirit.' Having said this, he breathed his last." These last words on Jesus' mind and tongue as he breathed his last breath come from Psalm 31, a psalm of trusting in God's love. As I read a selection from this psalm, may the words strengthen your trust in God, as they would have strengthened Jesus' faith in his final moments of enduring the torture of the crucifixion. "Into your hand I commit my spirit. You have redeemed me, O Lord, faithful God. You hate those who pay regard to worthless idols, but I trust in the Lord. I will exalt and rejoice in your steadfast love, because you have seen my affliction. You have taken notice of my adversities and have not delivered me into the hand of the enemy. You have set my feet in a broad place. Be gracious to me, O Lord, for I am in distress. My eye wastes away from grief, my soul and body also. For my life is spent with sorrow and my years with sighing. My strength fails because of my misery, and my bones waste away. I am the scorn of all my adversaries, a horror to my neighbors, an object of dread to my acquaintances. Those who see me in the street flee from me. I have passed out of mind like one who is dead. I have become like a broken vessel, for I hear the whispering of many, terror all around, as they scheme together against me, as they plot to take my life. But I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hand. Deliver me from the hand of my enemies and persecutors. Let your face shine upon your servant. Save me in your steadfast love. Oh, how abundant is your goodness that you have laid up for those who fear you and accomplished for those who take refuge in you, in the sight of everyone. Blessed be the Lord, for he has wondrously shown his steadfast love to me when I was beset as a city under siege. I had said in my alarm, I am driven far from your sight. But you heard my supplications when I cried out to you for help. Love the Lord, all you his saints. The Lord preserves the faithful, but abundantly repays the one who acts haughtily. Be strong and let your heart take courage, all you who wait for the Lord. Amen.